With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is the Drive and Dish Podcast.
Part of the 16 Win the Ring Network.
Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy.
We haven't even started yet!
To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
Part of what makes him such a good defender is his ability to switch, his ability to contest that three-point shot even when he is 7 feet away from it to run out and close out on the shooter.
Kevin Rayfuse.
If Russell Westbrook averages a triple-double for the season and his team makes the playoffs, I don't know how it can be anyone other than...
And Justin Kuzak.
I know, I just feel like they got this guy and he's just been injured since. Like, I'm curious to see how they work him into lineups. Like, they've gotten so used to not having him. Like, how do they end up using him?
The Drive and Dish Podcast.
We start right now.
We want to welcome everybody to the mid-season Blog Talk Radio NBA Trade Deadline All-Star Break Bonanza Roundtable. My name is Kevin Rayfuse. I am the host of the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. I am going to be moderating this roundtable tonight. We are part of the 16 Wins a Ring Network, hosted by Blog Talk Radio. You can follow me on Twitter at Rayfuse to Lose. And we've got five people part of this roundtable tonight, just an excellent all-star panel. So I want to introduce everybody first. First up, you hear him with me on the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. He is my co-host, Tim Tompkins. He's also the host of the Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. You can follow him on Twitter at Radio Tim NBA. And Tim, you know, it's fancy seeing you here.
What a strange coinkidink.
It's almost as if we didn't see each other just a few hours ago.
Well, ball don't lie.
Second, we have Chris Axman. He is the host of the Almighty Ballin' NBA show, founder of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network at almightyballer.com. And you can check him out on Twitter at Almighty Ballin'. Chris, what's going on, man?
Not much. I just felt like coming on this podcast was an offer I couldn't refuse.
You know, Chris, if I had a dollar for every time I heard a pun off that, I probably wouldn't have to be podcasting right now. Chris has been on our show, the Drive and Dish NBA podcast, two or three times. And each time, I don't really know why it's worked this way, but I haven't been available. So, Chris, it's nice to actually, you know, have you on an episode where I'm here.
Oh, especially because you're my favorite host of the Drive and Dish podcast.
That'll be our little secret, though. We don't need to tell anybody. There doesn't need to be anybody else who's listening. And Justin's out here somewhere.
You,
we can pretend he's behind the boards, keeping us honest, as always. Third on the list joining us, we have Jason Mann. He's the host of the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. Also part of the Step Back on Fansided.com. Jason, how are you tonight, man?
Doing great. Thanks for having me. And I would be surprised if we go through without any kind of pun on my last name.
Well, the night is young, my friend. We are only, I think, 4 minutes now into this. So I'm sure we can sneak one in. It shouldn't be too difficult. Next up on the list, we have Bran Kinchelow. He's the host of the Golden State of Mind cast here on Blog Talk Radio. Also, check out goldenstateofmind.com. So he's checking in from the West Coast. Bran, what's going on, man?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I'm, you know, being a Warriors fan, I imagine that's a real tough business right now.
Well, the funny thing is, and we'll get into this later, I'm sure, but it's strange to have people like talk business about being a Warriors fan and it being a sad thing to be. And yet the last 20 years have just been the worst of all time. So it's definitely a strange place to be.
It's all about where you are right now. We are here in 2017 and certainly nothing to complain about there. But last but not least, we have Sean Anderson joining us. He's representing the Fast Break podcast. Also got to check out mostvaluablepodcast.com. And so, Sean, I'm pretty sure that's Big Sean's name as well. So do you get many Big Sean jokes?
No, I don't get any Big Sean jokes. Actually, people usually just say it's Scene, just completely butcher my first name. So thanks for
really?
Getting there. A lot of in grammar school, I got a lot of Scene, but not a lot of Big Sean references.
You know, that's I feel like with that form of Sean, that's pretty common. I mean, am I wrong for that? Am I wrong for thinking that?
I think people just usually like Deshaun, like, you know, the S-H-A-W-N. I think people usually take that as Sean because it's easier to phonetically see because people say the SEA and say C.
Oh, well, either way, we're sticking it right here. So Sean Anderson, like you said, Fast Break Podcast, my most valuable podcast.com. Check that out. We got a jam-packed show. We are, as we are recording this, we are a few hours away from the trade deadline. All-Star Weekend has just passed. And, you know, the beauty of the timing is this episode is a lot of different things are going down tonight. You know, one topic we were talking about before we started recording this that just happened, Lou Williams has been traded to the Rockets. Terms are still coming out with that. We're not going to go too heavy into that. But the big news that I want to get into that happened just a few hours before we really start recording, big time news out of Lakerland, really Game of Thrones-esque. Mitch Kupchak and Jim Buss are out of Lakers management. Magic Johnson is in the fold. Jeannie Buss really flexing her power right now. You know, she's really had the ability to do this for a while. And we've seen the, you know, kind of rumors of this going back and forth, but really interesting timing coming around the trade deadline. So, Chris, I want to start out with you. You know, like we said, Magic Johnson coming into the fold, obviously a big part of Laker lore and Laker history, but this will be the first time he's really kind of had this position in the basketball world. So I guess what were your initial reactions to this upheaval in Lakerland?
Well, so I don't think it's very Game of Thrones at all. I think she was really patient with her brother. The time window, there was this point where her brother said that, you know, if we're not contending within a year, then I'll step aside. And that sort of turned into, well, but when does that clock start and when does that calendar end? And is that going to be 1 year or two or three? And, you know, finally, I feel like what happened actually is that we saw, and specifically, I think Jeannie saw the Lakers whiff on yet another chance, or maybe personally, like, say, okay, fine, we'll pass on Boogie. And she was just like, are you kidding me? And that's basically the reaction that everyone else in the NBA had, right? Is that it sounds like what would have done it is probably Clarkson and Randall and that one Euro center that they drafted in the second round last year and a first rounder a couple years from now. That probably would have done it. I would rather have that than Buddy Hield. They'd have a center at their weakest position. So I think that she was patient. I think that the move needed to happen. And now we have to see if Irvin, if Magic Johnson's Twitter takes are things that he really believes, that he's not just trying to stir the pot.
Well, that's the thing, and the beauty of the internet, which just remains undefeated, is people have already started digging up all of Magic Johnson's tweets. To which Chris,
oh, I tweeted first, four of them, if you want me to read them.
Please, by all means, because my favorite one that I've seen so far is when Michael Carter Williams was traded to the Bucks. He said that they had just acquired the new Jason Kidd.
19th of February, 2015, the Bucks just acquired the next Jason Kidd in Michael Carter Williams. 20th of March, 2011. For all of you out there questioning Jimmer Fredette of BYU, he is the real deal. Hashtag men care.
Wait, hashtag what?
Men care. Men care.
Like, I don't understand that.
I don't either. It's fine. Just don't think about it.
That's some Illuminati stuff right there.
31st of October, 2016. I'm impressed with the Chicago Bulls starting Rondo, Butler, and Wade. And with Michael Carter Williams coming off the bench, they have the third best group of guards in the league. 18th of March, 2014. Congrats to Knicks owner Jim Dolan and GM Steve Mills on bringing a champion and winner like Phil Jackson.
Oh boy. Oh God. That Phil Jackson not going as well as they would have imagined. There was another one too where he said something like, Laker fans, our number one free agent target should be Kevin Durant. And just start laughing at the sheer just thanks Magic of that. And so with that, I'll kick it to the Warriors fan Bram. You know, do you have faith in Magic, or are we just laughing at his tweets, and is he just getting these tweets off? You know, how do you think he's going to do in this role?
So I have a couple different things here. So I actually live in New York City. I live in Brooklyn, even though I write for Golden State of Mine, and I'm a huge, you know, I grew up in the Bay Area and I'm a huge Warriors fan, and I, you know, cover the team and etc. But so I have a like kind of an interesting perspective in that I've seen Phil Jackson come into New York City, and I've sort of like witnessed that progression from him being the savior to him being just the most reviled person in the city, maybe outside of, Dolan. So that being said, like when Phil first showed up in New York, the thought was that, well, he's obviously going to be able to get these all-star, like, you know, free agents. You know, people are going to find, you know, the Durants and the LeBrons and all those guys, they're finally going to at least take meetings with the Knicks and, like, at least come to, you know, have these situations. And that just didn't happen. And I think that's a deeper thing that's happening within the league, in that, you know, like the Lakers and the Knicks, that, you know, two of the premier franchises in our league, are no longer just guaranteed meetings with these sort of all-star players, you know? And so is Magic going to be able to get meetings with, you know, players of Durant's caliber or players of LeBron's caliber, you know, down the road? So, and I don't know. I think Magic might have a better chance than Phil, but if Phil couldn't do it in New York, there's definitely no guarantee that Magic will be able to do it in LA. And I think that it's almost destined to fail given the current climate of the NBA and the way that teams have been able to successfully build with being smart and, like, making small moves and sort of working from within, and, like, the splash hire and hiring somebody like Magic or hiring somebody like Phil, I feel like it's almost doomed to failure in this day and age.
Well, and it's funny you mentioned the free agency meetings. I know the big one, obviously, in recent years where the Lakers just absolutely butchered it was their initial pitch to LaMarcus Aldridge, where, you know, they essentially had it, you know, a lot of based on history, and it didn't seem like they were focused now. And so, Jason, I'll ask you, you know, you really take a look back at the league often on Over and Back. And so I ask you the question, you know, how damaged do you think the Laker brand is at this point? Is, you know, how much can they rely on the past to bring in free agents like this in 2017?
It's hard. I do think it's pretty damaged. I don't think the past, you know, for them matters all that much. I do think, though, I think there's a chance that if Magic Johnson is more of there for the big picture, there to just bring some stability back to things, there being, you know, political cover for some moves that might be unpopular, and they have someone else smart running the day-to-day and making those decisions that, you know, Magic Johnson probably isn't going to be great at making, you know, just with his level of detail of knowledge of the league. But, you know, Magic Johnson's been really successful in business. He's smart with people. He obviously is smart about basketball in a certain sense, probably getting some of those intangible qualities in terms of, you know, what kind of leadership he wants, what kind of thing. So I do think he can bring value. And I think if he manages in a more of a hands-off, just kind of giving a general vision and giving a general direction and letting, you know, Luke Walton, whoever the general manager is, to kind of bolster the nuts and bolts and handle the nitty-gritty stuff, I think that situation actually could end up being, you know, pretty okay.
Well, and he doesn't necessarily inherit the worst situation in the world. A lot of young talent there at D'Angelo Russell, Jordan Clarkson to a lesser extent. He's faded out a bit this year, but nevertheless still in the fold. Julius Randle, Brandon Ingram, the number two overall pick this year. So as he steps into that, you know, really you compare the Lakers to some of these other young cores out there. And Sean, I'll ask you, with the situation that he's inheriting right now, you know, how do you think the Lakers stack up relative to some of these other young and up and coming teams like Minnesota, like Philly, like Milwaukee?
Well, I think they're in a great position, especially because of the market that they're in. I mean, you look at Los Angeles, and obviously, you know, second largest market in the United States. And with Brandon Ingram, the guy that they said was untouchable, I think that's going to be the guy that they're going to look to build around, because D'Angelo Russell, he's been very off and on. He's been a guy that has some character issues that hasn't been able to really get settled in Los Angeles. You look at Clarkson, like you mentioned, he's been struggling. Randle has kind of hit his ceiling. So I look at the Lakers core, and I think they're not going to really stick with this young core. I think they're going to keep a couple guys around and maybe use some of these guys as role players. But I think the reason they're bringing in Magic is to make sure that Los Angeles is in that forefront, is in those free agent meetings. And I think that's the reason why when his first move is to bring in his GM and Rob Pelinka. He's the agent for Kobe. He's the agent for James Harden. And I think they're doing this because they know how to pitch the city, and they know how to pitch the market of LA, and they know how to pitch the Lakers. So I think that this young core isn't going to be around for too much longer. I don't think Russell's going to be on this team in the near future, and I don't think Clarkson's going to be on this team in the near future. I think Ingram's probably the only really true guy that's going to be able to stay around, and then whoever they draft this year as well.
Tim, I'll pose to you the question. You know, you just heard Sean there rattling off that he thinks Ingram is the guy to build around and that some of these guys may not be here. You know, which of these guys in the young core do you think are keepers so far?
I don't think you can give up on Jordan Clarkson. He might be struggling recently, but I think that the kid's shown a lot of promise. I mean, you look at Julius Randle, and he seems to be coming into his own, especially from an assist and passing perspective. But I think that if you look at Magic Johnson, that he's been in the job one day as of recording this podcast, and we can already kind of see the moves he's making. I mean, he traded Lou Williams for a first round pick as soon as he got there. You know, obviously they're going to try and get rid of some dead money and Timofey Mozgov. And I think, look, if you're the Lakers, that you're going into this season, when the season's over, they could win 25 games and not have their pick. And you have somebody you're bringing in, Magic Johnson, who the city loves, who the NBA loves, and it's hard for him to do a worse job. But I think coming into this season, or ending this season, I should say, and being a bottom barrel team and quite possibly not having your pick, that the Lakers needed to put a smile, some sort of happy face on the direction of the franchise. And without a move like Magic Johnson, I'm not sure that they could have done it otherwise.
So I actually have a question here for you guys. How deeply does this reflect on Jeannie at this point? Because now there's nowhere else to hide. You know, she can't blame things on Jim. She can't blame things on Coop Jack. Like, it's just Jeannie and Magic at this point. And so if things don't go well, you know, where do the Lakers go from here?
Hinky.
I mean, I'm always an advocate of Hinky. and I want to mention Hinky a little bit later once we get into Sacramento. But, you know, Lakers, God, trust the process.
You know, it was interesting to listen to all of you guys respond since I went first, because I'm a little bit concerned about some of the stuff that you brought up, especially the idea that he is going to move away from some of the young players. I'm a little bit iffy on a few of them, and on other guys I really like. And I feel like we don't have enough of an evidence built up, you know, enough to look at over the course of their very short NBA careers to say, okay, let's hold on to this guy, let's move on from this guy. And if they start pulling the trigger and bringing in guys like Rudy Gay, or, you know, just like second rate superstars, Carmelo, right, exactly, guys like that, and pulling the trigger and sending away guys, even if you hold on to the guy who's the most promising, like Brandon Ingram, not even sure if I agree with that. I think that could be a dark path to walk down. I think that that sounds a little bit like the Brooklyn Nets, honestly.
What's the over-under for how long it takes for LA to turn on Magic? I guess that's my question. Because in New York, like, you know, people turn on Phil in about a year and a half, you know, and Phil is like this golden child that walked in. And so, like, how, you know, LA loves Magic. And Magic, to his own credit, is taking a huge risk here. If he doesn't get it right, like, that, you know, it could tarnish his whole career there to a certain extent. So
it's the way that Phil handled everything in New York. It's the way he handled the whole Carmelo Anthony thing, because people did make fun of the moves that he made this offseason, but people still put him as a playoff team because of the moves he made. So I think Magic is going to have time. It's just going to be as long as people see the vision, because you do have Luke Walton, who's going to be a part of some of this personnel stuff. And Bram, you can talk about Jerry West, because his son Ryan's most likely going to be a part of Magic's front office as well. So I think they're going to just try to build up this kind of contingency that Magic can go to, where Magic is going to be, like what Jason said, kind of the public figure, where you're going to look more towards Ryan West to be the guy that handles the personnel. And we also can't forget, I mean, they're going to have a top three draft pick most likely if they win if they're, you know, getting into the lottery, because right now they currently sit at three. So if they do keep that position, they're still going to get a guy like Markelle Fultz, Lonzo Ball, Josh Jackson, a guy who can really change this franchise around.
And this is a fantastic draft. I mean, I think that, you know, I'm just playing devil's advocate because it's curious to me, and I love talking about this stuff, obviously. But, like, you know, I think that Jeannie played her hand really well, and I think Magic obviously played his hand really well, and they're situated to kind of like take advantage of this draft, which is like maybe going to be one of the all-time drafts, hopefully, if these guys all play out. And then the fact that, you know, I think it's nothing but a good thing for Lakers that they got rid of Jim. Like, Kupchak, you know, Mitch, it's like it's hard to, you know, he's been there for so long and he's seen so much success and he's seen so much failure on the back end of it. But, like, he really, you know, you can't get rid of all the success that he had at the same time. With Jim, I think it's easier to say goodbye to Jim. But at the same time, you know, I'm a Lakers hater. I'm a Warriors fan. So it's funny for me to watch from afar now that the roles have flipped, that the Warriors are seemingly in control and that the Lakers are, you know, struggling to kind of find their identity. And, you know, does Kobe come back? You know, here comes Magic. Here, Genie is taking over the whole Game of Thrones thing and everything. So it's just it's great times in the NBA, man. Like the whole thing with DeMarcus Cousins and everything with the Lakers is just it's fantastic storylines.
Dude, it's been a wild week.
Well, and that's why I said Tim and I both work in radio. That's how we met each other. And I worked the overnight shift. So usually a lot of times I may not be up as late. But so I was up that Sunday night watching the All-Star game. And, you know, I dozed off a little bit in the second quarter, kind of missed halftime, and then just woke up to the Woj bomb of all Woj bombs. And so, you know, DeMarcus Cousins traded to the Pelicans. He has officially been introduced on the team's Twitter page. He's going to wear number 0, which I think is pretty cool, getting rid of 15. We already know the terms by now. The big takeaway for the Kings is getting Buddy Hield. They also have their first round pick this year. You know, a few other throw-ins in there that we're not going to get too heavy into. But needless to say, this has been all sorts of scrutinized. And Tim, I'll start with you because you and I have had many discussions about this. And you have really, really tried to find the bright side of this for the Kings. Like, I commend you with how hard you tried to find the bright side for the Kings. So please tell Kings fans remotely anything that they can hang their hat on.
Well, I think if you're looking at it from the Kings' perspective, that they didn't want to pay DeMarcus Cousins $200 million and handicap their franchise over the next 5 years. Not that DeMarcus Cousins would necessarily handicap their franchise, but I mean, look, you haven't won with them. I think that they probably could have gotten a little bit more if they would have waited. But, you know, at the end of the day, where they were able to shed some salary, they were able to get under the blanket that was DeMarcus Cousins for, you know, since they drafted the guy. They are bringing in Buddy Hield. He's only 3 years younger than DeMarcus Cousins. He's 23 compared to DeMarcus Cousins is 26. And the Kings haven't exactly had a lot of luck as far as shooting guards go. But I think if you're a Kings fan, that as sad as it is to see DeMarcus Cousins go, because he did so much for the Sacramento community, and that speech he gave where he basically teared up saying how much he was going to miss the city, I mean, I think that the fans really appreciate him. But at the same time, and I kind of use this analogy on the Drive and Dish podcast, but it's like when you're really in love with a girl, but you know that it's not the right fit, that you know it's not going to work, and she ends up leaving you, and how hard it is when she leaves you, but at the end of the day, you know you get to start over. And I feel like as a Kings fan, at least you get to go into this offseason knowing that you have some cap space. They use a stretch provision on Matt Barnes, so it looks like, you know, that'll free up an extra $4 million, so they're going to spend some of that money. But they've also shed some salary. They brought in Langston Galloway, Tyreke Evans, if he's there throughout the end of the season, we'll see whether or not they keep him around. But, you know, I think if you're a Kings fan, that at the very least that you get to get out from underneath the cloud, and there's something to be said for that.
You know what time it is. It's time for us to talk to you about the absolute best app for buying any kind of tickets anywhere, the SeatGeek app. It's the smartest way to buy tickets for your basketball games. You can see live up close this season. There's nothing like being in the building for the biggest games of the year. And with SeatGeek, it's never been easier. You can get the guaranteed seats you want for a great value. I know you've heard about Luke Bryan canceling all the vendor tickets. Don't go to them. Go to SeatGeek. They really do want to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You will see green if it's good, red if it's bad. Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee. Again, bringing it back to Luke Bryan canceling those vendor tickets. That would totally suck to show up to a game and your ticket is not an actual ticket. Best thing of all, though, the Drive and Dish listeners are getting $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. All you got to do, download the SeatGeek app. It is free in the App Store. Go to the Settings tab and click Add a Promo Code. Enter the promo code DISH, D-I-S-H, as in drive-in dish. And when you buy your first ticket, you will get $20 off immediately. So don't ever say we never did anything for you, all right? The SeatGeek app, go get it now in your App Store.
So obviously, there's been a lot of scrutiny really pointed at Kings management, you know, Vivek and Vlade Divac have especially caught a lot of heat, especially when Vlade Divac comes out and says, oh, by the way, I had a better offer on the table 2 days ago. I just didn't do it, and I settled for this. You know, it essentially seems like he defeated his own trade before he even made it. So really just the optics have been something else, and the Kings just continue to add fuel to this fire of dysfunction.
Well, you know, hey, Kevin, can I jump in? Because I think there's a reason why that happened. What I think happened, and I think the reason why Vlade said that, is because every CBA, we just had a new one pass this last, you know, for this season going forward. So every new CBA, there's big changes that have big unintended consequences. And what we saw this time around is that Boogie's agent, Boogie's people, Boogie's management so badly wanted that extra $50 million because he can get that supermax for 35% of the cap, that they were threatening other teams, hey, if you trade for us and we're no longer eligible for the supermax, we will walk and we'll walk to the Lakers. That's what they were telling every single team. So that's an interesting new consequence, and one that, I mean, I don't think anyone saw coming. I don't think anyone saw a superstar player basically holding their terrible management at gunpoint and, you know, saying like, put the money in the bag. But that's essentially what I think was happening when Vlade finally could bring Vivek around to trading Cousins. So I think that that's why he said, oh, well, we had a better trade on the deal. And then, I don't know, I think that instead of just saying it in that press conference, they sort of leaked it afterwards that the reason why that deal was not made is because the other team felt threatened by Boogie's agent.
Well, then, so I'll ask you the follow-up then. The Kings have obviously, you know, moved on, and they're going to be pretty terrible for the rest of the season. You look at that roster, and their net rating without DeMarcus Cousins on the floor is a negative -7 right now. So I asked the question, you know, where do the Kings go from here? How do they even begin to this rebuilding process?
I honestly haven't even started thinking about it because they're just so bad now. And normally the rebuilding process is, well, you're bad for a little bit and the draft brings you upwards little by little, and then you're good. And then you get bad after you don't get good draft picks and your good players get old. But the Kings are just going to stay bad forever. So,
well, how many draft picks? They already have 3 going into this year's draft, and they're shopping Darren Collins. Well, and they're shopping Matt Lamore. Okay.
Here's what I want to happen, because it would be I think that they would have to like have the draft and in the background be playing that, like, you know, you know what I'm talking about, that song, whatever. If the Pelicans got the first pick in the draft, let's just say that were to happen, it's top 3 protected, and it would communicate to them, right? And then next, if the Sacramento Kings got the second pick in the draft, it would communicate to Philly, right? So even if Sacramento gets the top 3 pick, it ends up with Philly, right? And then if Philly were to make the playoffs and get the 16th pick and swap it with the Kings, then that would be the only first round pick that the Kings would get next season, is the 16th pick via Philly.
Well, and Sacramento can lose their own pick if they fall out of top 10, because that goes to Chicago.
Right.
So they might be totally screwed.
Right. They might not even, I think there's a possibility that they could not have one pick next year.
Well, hopefully they'll get something for Darren Collison and Ben McLemore then, right? Aaron Aflalo. Somebody's got to give him something. I'm not sure what. Like, if you can get Cousins for that, then maybe you can just dangle like a 2025 second rounder and they'll sell on him.
Well, if you're getting a guy like Lou Williams, who only got a late first rounder, I don't know how much you can get for Darren Collison with his domestic violence stuff, and yeah, Aaron Aflalo right. Shooting kind of pretty low for his career. The one thing with Sacramento, though, is I'm worried if I'm a Sacramento Kings fan, because you look at the past drafts that Vivek Ranadive has had, and Vlade Divac as well, they constantly miss, and it just seems like they don't know what fits their team, because they drafted Willie Cauley-Stein and Thomas Robinson, guys consistently at that power forward position, even this year.
Giorgio Papagiannis.
Yeah, picking up Papagiannis and even Scale Abissier with the 28th pick. I mean, they constantly do not know what fits their team, so I'm not too confident, even with the wealth of picks, if they do end up with Sacramento.
Well, I'd like to point out, too, that that Vivek thinks that Buddy Hield has Steph Curry potential also.
He thought that Nick Stauskas was a mix of Steph.
Right, and so he thought Stauskas was the second coming of Klay Thompson. And it's kind of messed up, because I think that Vivek, who was one of the Warriors owners, and as a Warriors fan, like, you know, he was part of that ownership crew that bought the Warriors from that saved us from the dark ages of the past, you know, when Joe Lacob and crew came in. Like, Vivek was part of that, and that now, but every single decision that he's made so far with the Kings has seemingly been to like try to replicate something that happened with the Warriors, you know, like Stauskas.
The Bizarro Warriors.
Yeah, they're the super, like, they're the what's that TV show that Stranger Things with the underworld or whatever, like the upside down. Yeah, they're the upside down warriors. And so, like, you know, Stauskas was the upside down Clay. And now Buddy Hield, like, he hasn't learned any lessons. So Buddy Hield is the upside down world.
Boogie's the upside down JaVale McGee.
They had Jimmer Fredette,
yeah,
too.
Well, I mean, to Jimmer Fredette's credit, he did just score 73 points in a Chinese League game. I mean,
listen, I'm still all in on Jimmer, but only in the Chinese
League. It was Magic, yeah.
Yeah, that's where he should be. But no, but with a Rana dive, like, it's just tough, man. Like, you know, I want him to do well, and you know, especially like as a former owner of the Warriors and as somebody who, like, you know, seemingly has contributed great amounts of goodwill to the human race and, like, you know, has cool technological stuff going on, but just his basketball ideas are just wrong. Every single thing that he's decided upon as the owner of the Kings has been wrong. So I feel like actually in the future he should just like really like dive deep into what he thinks he should do and then just like do the exact opposite, and then his team will be awesome.
Well, they did draft Isaiah Thomas,
and then got ripped.
And then they just
okay, yeah, that's something I wanted to bring up to you. All right, what trade is worse, trading Boogie for Buddy Hield the first and Langston Galloway, whatever, the Boogie trade or the trade they made a couple of years back for Isaiah Thomas on their end, the rights to the 57th pick in the upcoming draft, and a $7 million trade exception? So Isaiah Thomas for literally nothing is basically.
Or also, let's throw in the drafting Stauskas with the sixth or seventh pick or whatever it was, and then giving him away for absolutely nothing. Plus the swap with Philly?
That one's stupid. But I think that just like in terms of like giving away depending on how you want to rank the NBA's player, you could say with a straight face, Isaiah Thomas is a top 10 NBA player and Boogie Cousins is a top 10 NBA player. Yeah, okay, look, I wouldn't say that.
Isaiah is that's a little bit.
Look, I'm just saying you could say
he's definitely
it,
a
right?
two-time All-Star. I'll give you that. Isaiah is a fantastic player. He's definitely not 10, but.
And they got nothing for him.
Well, the one thing for Isaiah Thomas, too, is I say that one kind of nullifies itself, the fact that he wasn't even able to stay with the Phoenix Suns. So if he stayed with the Suns and was doing with the Suns, then I think that would be the worst trade. But I think, you know, getting the DeMarcus Cousins trade is just worse on so many facets, and especially the way that they handled it, too, because, you know, obviously Bram talked about it, too, with the Phil Jackson thing, is how he's currently handling the Carmelo situation, but Vlade is still handling it poorly. I mean, he comes out and even says character matters in the DeMarcus Cousins trade, and obviously we know the whole stuff with Boogie apparently bullying Nick Stauskas, but the thing with that is, you know, you look at Darren Collison currently on the team, was suspended for 8 games for domestic violence. Rajon Rondo throwing gay slurs to a gay referee, still on the team after for the full season, and, you know, saying to Boogie and his agent that he was going to be on the team and he wasn't going to get traded. And Boogie even saying, I think last Thursday, that he wants to stay with Sacramento. The fact that, you know, Vlade goes out and trades him and pretty much goes behind his back. I mean, there's a lot there that even Vlade Divac is, you know, counteracting himself.
Well, and I think that, like, saying character matters is a very different thing than actually believing that character matters. And so, like, if you really believe that character matters, like, you wouldn't put out a letter that says that character matters and, like, throw shots at DeMarcus as you send him out the door, you know? Like, that's a very classless act. So if character does actually matter, just, like, take care of your business, deal with the industry in which you're in, and then, like, you know, don't say anything. And that none of that stuff would make it into the press, and we wouldn't be talking about it. But the fact that, like, they say that character matters, it just, like, it negates everything that they're trying to do. And I just, like, don't trust Vlade to handle things appropriately at this point.
So I want to switch now to the other side of the coin, and that's the Pelicans. And Jason, I'll start this one with you. The comparison that people are making already before they've even played a game is it's possibly the most intimidating front court since Tim Duncan and David Robinson back in the day. You know, regardless, both of these guys can play the five, both of these guys can play the floor or the four. So you have a bit of different flexibility that you can do in terms of the lineups. You imagine Boogie's going to play more of the five and Anthony Davis will play more of the four, but regardless, some flexibility there. So I guess, you know, obviously a huge boost to the Pelicans. Just how much of a boost to the Pelicans do you think this is?
Yeah, that's going to be the interesting question because, you know, obviously they both play inside and outside. So I think the idea that they can, you know, work together fine, you know, not getting each other's way, I think is pretty valid, even though some of them could kind of play some of the same territory. I think it'll be interesting to see how, you know, figuring out how the two of them fit, you know, the defensive issues. Neither one is necessarily the most stout defender ever. You know, their effort waxes and wanes here and there, but they both are, you know, effective inside and outside players. So I think they can, you'd probably make that pretty work. And, you know, Alvin Gentry is certainly a creative offensive coach, but whether he's the right guy to manage, you know, those egos, you know, whether the chemistry personality mix works. I think we know enough to know that Boogie is a very fiery personality, and AD seems a bit more laid back. So whether that blends well or whether that, you know, doesn't blend well, I think there's going to be a lot of interesting questions with the Pelicans.
And so, Sean, I'll ask you the same question, you know, initial reaction to the fit. How do you think this is going to work?
Well, I think interesting is probably the best word to use, is because it's really, you know, can they even gel together? Are they going to be like a 41-41 team, or they're going to be like a top four team in the West? I think it's really about that gelling and how are they going to work on the floor together, because like Jason said, they could both do it from the inside and outside. They're both powerhouses, the only two players in the past 4 years to be averaging 20 points per game and 10 rebounds per game. So it's going to be interesting with guys that, you know, combined have a usage rate of 65%, how they're actually going to be able to use those two together. I mean, I wouldn't even surprised if they have, you know, those two separated in shifts, where you have Anthony Davis and DeMarcus on the floor to start the game, and then, you know, you take out one of them and kind of have them alternating in and out. It's going to be interesting to see how they work, and I think it's going to be really interesting to see what they do in the offseason, because they're not going to have a first-round draft pick, obviously, trading it to Sacramento. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do in free agency. And is Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins enough to bring in another free agent? Because I think Jrue Holiday is you know, a very good point guard. I think that he's going to work well with these two. But, you know, you're going to need shooting from that 2 and 3 spot, and you're going to need defense from that 2 and 3 spot. And they do have Solomon Hill as well for that 3D. But I don't think that's enough. I mean, obviously you need some more depth on the bench. So I think it's going to be very interesting. I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but I think they can definitely contend for that 8 seed with the Nuggets.
Well, you talk about that 8 seed, and Tim, I'll pose this to you. You know, they're in the mix with Denver and Portland, really, but sitting as of now recording this, only 2.5 back of that 8 seed. Do you think they're the favorites at this point to jump up the ladder and snag that last spot?
I don't think that they're necessarily I think it's a Nugget spot to lose. When you're integrating talent like that, you know, Boogie's a 35% usage rate. That stuff takes time, and how we've mentioned it on other podcasts before, but talking about the Cavs and Kyle Korver and how difficult that's been for the Cavaliers to integrate in, and you're just talking about Kyle Korver. You aren't talking about a Boogie Cousins. And I mean, if you're the Pelicans, you have 25 games remaining, 15 of which are versus current playoff teams, as opposed to the Nuggets, 26 games remaining, 12 versus current playoff teams. You know, they need some help. They're definitely going to need some shooting. I think, I don't know if you guys know if Quincy Pondexter is coming back, but I think he'd be a huge help for him.
Caspi is heading over from Sacramento in the trade, and I wouldn't be surprised if within a week or two he ends up being the starting small forward for them too.
Yeah, that was like one of the low-key parts of the trade that it seems like he's going to be a really good fit, and frankly happy to get out of Sacramento.
Surround him with shooting. He definitely can hit the three ball a little bit. You know, Tim just talked about that adjustment period. Chris, how long do you think that adjustment period is going to take? You know, do you think they can figure it out enough in time to challenge for that 8 seed? Do you think they're the favorite?
If I'm the Pelicans, or if I'm a Pelicans fan, I almost hope not. Alvin Gentry's all right. I don't think he's the right coach for this team. And, you know, I think if you look at the league, and this is sort of true about management too, which is funny because we've talked a little bit about that. I think there are 5 coaches who are above the rest of everyone else, and then 5 coaches who are below the rest of everyone else. And I think Alvin Gentry goes in that middle 20 area. And I mean, if I have a front court that looks like Boogie and Anthony Davis, I want one of those top 5 coaches. I want a better coach, or at least if I get one of the middle coaches, a better fit. Someone like Dave Yeager, who knows how to play around a point guard like Conley, who's a lot like Drew, a power forward like Randolph, you know, compared to Anthony Davis. And then instead of Gasol, you have a passing big like Cousins. I mean, that would be a fantastic fit, even though he isn't, you know, Brad Stevens, Rick Carlisle, Greg Popovich. That'd be fine. So I almost hope that I hope that they don't make the playoffs, and I don't expect them to either. But I mean, if they do, you know, this is what happens when you have two of the top five players in the NBA, and then Drew Holiday's come on, and he's, you know, maybe a top 10 point guard at this point.
Yeah, it's certainly not a bad place to be in right now. And again, the Pelicans are currently sitting at 11th place. You know, Sacramento is going to drop. They will have to compete with Portland and Denver. You know, realistically, they're too far back at this point to catch the Thunder or the Grizz for that 7 or 6 seed. But regardless, we're going to be there. And with that, I want to take now a bigger look at the Western Conference as a whole. Really, the narrative going into this season was that it's the Warriors to lose, and rightfully so. Sitting atop right now, 47-9, we know how good this team is. And now that Kevin Durant is becoming a bit more integrated, they're starting to hit that stride. And so, Bram, I'll let you start off as the resident Warriors fan. You know when superstar teams come together, there's this gelling period, and before they can really hit the peak of their firepower. So here now at the All-Star break, at the trade deadline, you know, what have you made of the Warriors season so far? And do you think they have it figured out, I guess?
There's so many interesting sort of ways to compare this season to last season, you know. And I think last season they were coming off winning the championship, and they had realized that they could set the record for 73 wins. You know, they won like 26 in a row coming out like out of the gate or whatever it was. And I think that there were certain players in the locker room, like specifically Draymond Green, who really wanted to set that record. And 73-9 sounds great until you lose in the finals, you know. So this team is weathered. This team has gone through a lot, regardless of the fact that they brought on Kevin Durant. Like, obviously, that's fantastic. But it's still the same team. Like, the core of the team is still the same. It's still Kerr, and it's still Curry, and it's still Green and Clay and Draymond and everybody. I think that there is something actually humbled about this team, that they, you know, they're not trying to go for 74-8. You know, even to get to 73-9, as crazy as it is, they'd have to win out from here. They would literally have to win out. They'd have to win every single game from here until the end of the season to even just match their record from last season, which really shows how crazy that record is. And I think that there's something about the team gelling in this way, and there's something about the team, you know, acquiring Durant, and there's something about them sending four All-Stars to, you know, to this weekend, and there's something about the way that the season is going, is that they finally realize that the regular season is not very important, and they finally realize, you know, for them to achieve their ultimate goal, which is the championship. Like, I think them bringing in Durant and like them, you know, figuring out plays, and, you know, especially them going into OKC, I think that that was a huge growing point for the team, and the whole cupcake thing and the whole strange situation. You know, when you get presented with situations where you come up against adversity, obviously you bond together if people have your back. And I think that, like, the OKC situation and the whole cupcake situation and the whole Westbrook situation, inadvertently, that was the best thing that the Warriors possibly could have gone through, because now they know that they're all in it together. And now going towards the playoffs and going towards the end of the season, I feel like finally, coming out of All-Star break, like, they're finally coalescing into a legitimate team. And it's scary. I mean, it's scary. They have, you know, they have the best record in the NBA, and they still haven't quite figured out how to play together. So, like, what happens in, like, round two versus Rockets or whatever, where they, like, finally figure out their like, peak, or in the finals? Or, you know, it's just, it's exciting as a Warriors fan, because I went through so much just utter garbage, like watching such just utter shite from the perspective of a fan. But it's also exciting as a basketball fan, because I'm excited to see what these guys can do on a purely basketball level. You know, watching Curry and Durant and Green and Clay play together is just transcendent basketball. And it should be, you know, like, those guys owe it to us as fans to play transcendent basketball. And if they can actually, like, achieve that, and if they can actually get to a level of play and a level of coexistence that we might not have seen before in the NBA, I think that it will have been worth it. And I, you know, even as a basketball fan, and then obviously primarily as a Golden State Warriors fan, I think that that's all that we can hope for is just completely beautiful, transcendent basketball that just like supersedes anything we've ever seen on the court before.
So Sean, I'll ask you the question then, kind of similar. Where do you think the Warriors are at this point of the season? And taking a look at the Western Conference as a whole, are there any teams in particular that you think can stop them?
Well, I think Bram hit it on the head that they really haven't reached their final form. I mean, KD's playing the lowest amount of minutes he's ever played in a full season, and Curry's playing the second lowest amount as he has as a starter. So, I mean, they really haven't played that much together, and they really haven't hit their stride. So I think if there's one team that really can, I don't think it's the Spurs because I don't think they have enough firepower on offense. I think it's truly the Rockets because...
Yeah, I think it's the Rockets too, actually.
I think it's the way that they can fire up three-pointers and the way they can score. And now the addition to Lou Williams, I think that just makes them so dangerous because, you know, if you're going to beat the Warriors without a guy named LeBron James, you're going to need to score, and you're going to need to score a lot. And, you know, I think it's going to be, you know, James Harden, Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson spreading out that Warriors defense and trying to play their game with them. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see if the Warriors have to face them in the second round and they're not at their full form. I think that's really going to be the biggest thing, whether it's the Western Conference Finals, second round. If there's any team out west, I think it's truly the Rockets that can give them trouble.
Well, you just mentioned the Rockets there, and you know, we'll kind of talk game planning against the Warriors. You know, both of you guys have said essentially said bombs away, and so Chris, I'll ask you, if you're matching up against the Warriors and you know you really have to attack somebody, or you know you're trying to look to slow this offense down, you know, where do you start if you're trying to find a weakness?
I see how much the Bucks are asking for Dellavedova, and I would, you know, make like an offshore bank account in Australia, put like a few million dollars in it, and just tell Dellavedova to like break Steph's kneecaps on something.
That's bad though. That's bad.
No, well, I mean, like yeah. That, like I think that's the real reason why the Rockets have the upper hand is because what we saw last year is catastrophe struck over and over and over. Whether it was the catastrophic decision to put Anderson Varejão in for crucial game 7 minutes, or injury in the first round to Steph's knee, or Draymond Green going mano a balls to everyone always and getting suspended. So, like, something really bad has to happen. And that was true last year, and it's even truer this year because now you have Kevin Durant. I mean, this year, if Draymond Green is suspended for game 5 or game 6 or whatever, like, so what? Like, so you'll start Iggy and Kevin Durant. Like, whatever. You're still more talented than whoever you're playing against. So in all reality, I don't condone hurting people. I'm a staunch pacifist, and I think that, you know, that's not the way to go to you know, hire people to break Steph's kneecaps. But like, something has to go horribly wrong. If that doesn't happen, then the Warriors are the favorite in a way that no one has ever been the favorite before.
Jason, I'll ask you the question then. Do you think it's Warriors versus the field at this point, or is there anybody, are you on that Houston bandwagon as well?
Yeah, it's Warriors versus the field. I mean, they're projected at 68 wins right now from 538. They're on pace for the best point differential in NBA history. And they're, as others have said, they're not even really clicking in the way that we expect them to. You know, they've just kind of, you know, kind of getting to the point where they've started to figure out things, but they still have some time to do it. So I don't see anyone else really competing with them. You don't want to write, you know, I still have some respect for San Antonio. Obviously, Cleveland is a tough matchup for them. But, you know, I would argue last season was a confluence of events that is highly unlikely to be repeated. And I think the Warriors are better now. So I think they're just it's theirs to lose.
Well, so let's switch gears a little bit. You know, as we keep the show moving right now, we'll head over to the Eastern Conference. And, you know, immediately we got to start with Cleveland, the team that by all accounts is the favorite to once again head to the finals. LeBron James back in it. We'll get our third rematch of these two teams. It seems like everybody's rooting for it at this point. I know we're all big fans of parity, but at the same time, when you've had series as awesome as the last two have been, it's pretty tough to argue with that. And so, Tim, I'll start with you. When we're looking at the Cavs, we've heard LeBron James in recent weeks talk about the Cavs need to go out and get a playmaker. He cited their need for a backup point guard. How much of that do you think is LeBron James just talking and trying to keep up with the Warriors and sees them clicking, or how much of it do you think is an actual genuine need for the Cavs?
No, I think it's absolutely a genuine need for the Cavs for multiple reasons. I mean, for one, they really only have one point guard in Kyrie Irving. But for two, LeBron James at his age just shouldn't be leading the league in minutes. You know, they did get Kyle Korver, who he's not much of a playmaker, but at least he can handle the ball a little bit as opposed to like the majority of their other players. If you're looking at Jefferson, Channing Frye, you know, those are spot up guys. So Kyle Korver does at least give somebody that can handle the ball, that can move around screens a little bit. But I think we'd be remiss not to mention that, you know, the Cavaliers did just pick up the former number two overall pick from 2011, Derek Williams.
You couldn't just go one episode without Derek Williams.
But I think it's important that we all recognize that they are not only addressing some of their needs, but they're addressing all of their needs. And at this point in life, you just got to feel bad for Derek Williams always being a backup to Kevin Love, no?
Oh, I think, don't they have three of the first four picks from the 2011 draft now? They have Kyrie, they have Derek Williams, and they have Tristan Thompson?
Iman Shumpert, too, from the same draft.
I guess then, Chris, I'll ask you, the other news for the Cavs recently is Kevin Love going down with the knee injury. You know, Tim just brought up LeBron James has really been carrying a heavy workload of minutes this year. How do the Cavs go about handling this? And, you know, how much is missing Love going to change their game plan for the second half of the season here?
Well, I think it validates LeBron's game plan, which is win the MVP this season and accept the fact that the Warriors are going to lay a smackdown on you once you get to the finals. I don't think that anyone in the East is that good. I think that probably it's like, you know, I think that if the Cavs were in the West, they'd still probably not be as good as, or I think the Rockets are a bigger challenge to the Warriors than the Cavs are at this point with the Kevin Love injury. Even when he comes back, we saw Blake Griffin have a similar procedure and take a few months to look, almost a little over half a year to look back to the Blake Griffin of old. You hope that Kevin Love's game is a little bit different and that'll translate differently. But I mean, with J.R. Smith and with Kevin Love playing at 60-65% of their capacity instead of last year's finals where pretty much everyone was playing at 500% of their capacity. LeBron is playing all of these minutes because for him, the regular season is the only thing that matters, because the finals, like at this point, again, something has to go horribly wrong for the Warriors. And look, that might happen again. Like, you know, stranger things have happened. Now that Boogie has been traded for Buddy Hield, all bets are off. Like, I think I live in Texas. I'm happy. I feel like I should go get a weapon to protect myself because, I mean, we live in such a wacky, insane world. Like, someone, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'll get, like, invaded by some foreign country. Like, because the world's imploding, I think, right now. And I think what LeBron has decided is that he's going to go for the MVP. And I think he's in that conversation right now. I think that there's three guys who stand out to me as viable MVP picks. And I think that he's going to try as hard as possible to make the reality that unfolds is, well, LeBron won his MVP probably for the last time in his career. Like, he just couldn't contend with the Warriors. I think that he wants everyone to look back and be like, well, the Warriors never beat the real Cavaliers and LeBron with any help. Because even when LeBron was an MVP that one season, you know, he had 2 out of 5 starters injured. And, like, that wasn't his fault. And then next season, maybe come back with the banana boat, maybe trade Kevin Love. I don't know. But right now, I'm just like, if I'm the Warriors, I'm not all that threatened.
Sean, I'll ask you, is there a playmaker out there do you think the Cavs can target? And, you know, to Chris's point, is it doom and gloom for the Cavs? Is there any way they can keep up in your mind?
Well, to be honest, I think I disagree completely with Chris, and nothing wrong with you said.
We'll fight you, man.
Said, Chris. I will fight you. I mean, you got to look back at that finals, and I know obviously Game 5 and the Draymond Green suspension was something that was a killer, but still, LeBron took over that last game, and so did Kyrie. I mean, Kyrie in those last three games and LeBron in those last three games was ridiculous. And the thing with Kevin Love, I mean, it's a minor surgery. He's going to be back in 6 weeks, and the one thing, too, is he's not going to have trouble in those first two rounds, and he'll be able to get acclimated back into, you know, Cavs mode where he's just sitting out there shooting threes, but he's been a little bit more involved in the offense. But still, you look at Kyle Korver and what he's done so far. I mean, he's on pace right now to have one of the best three-point shooting, I mean, outside of any Steph season, one of the best three-point shooting percentage-wise in the season. I mean, in any season, he's on pace to shoot 244 threes with the Cavs this year, and he's hitting a percentage of 51.5%. Only Steve Kerr and Legler have done that, both at 51 and 52 respectively, and he's only doing this with 30 games less than those guys. I mean, Kyle Korver adds a different dimension. He's getting open shots here. Derek Williams, like Tim mentioned, I mean, he's putting up his best numbers. I know it's only been four games, but he's still putting up his best numbers, at least percentage-wise. I look at the Cavs, and they're going to have an easy first two rounds, I think, in the East out there, and then it's going to really come down to the Eastern Conference Finals. And we thought the same thing, at least over here at Most Valuable Podcast, that the West, whoever came out of the West, was going to dominate the finals. And then when the Warriors did get out to their 3-1 lead, we thought it was completely over. But I really, we've seen LeBron come in so many times in seven straight finals. I mean, it's so hard to count him out. And just with the ability of what he can do, I think really it's just the minutes that might be the only thing that breaks his back.
The argument that LeBron is LeBron, and that he's one of the best players who have ever played the game of basketball, maybe the best, depending on how you want to break that down. I get it. I feel you. I understand. Did you seriously just come at me with, well, look at Kyle Korver, 36-year-old Kyle Korver, and how about that Derek Williams? Like, are you kidding me? The Warriors just added Kevin Durant.
Completely understand that, but just still, I mean, you have Kevin Durant, you have Klay Thompson, you have Steph, but we also saw Steph break down in the finals last year. We don't know if he's going to break down. You never saw LeBron break down, and you know, Kyle Korver's 36 years old, but he's still hitting threes like it's nothing, and he's getting wide-open shots. And the one thing, too, is the Cavs have size. I mean, K-Love and Tristan Thompson, who's going to be able to counteract that? I don't trust Zaza Pachulia, and I don't trust a small lineup of Kevin Durant and Draymond Green to stop both Tristan Thompson and K-Love defensively. So I know they'll be able to put up points offensively, but you look at the finals last year, they were still able to do this. I know Kevin Durant's not on the team, but still, they were still able to do what they did to the Warriors. I think they can replicate something like that.
Here's what I think is going to happen, right? I think that the Cavaliers last year won basically sneakily because they decided we're going to make Harrison Barnes win this by on defense helping off of him so much that he's wide open in the corner and force him to take those shots and then just covering everyone else, you know, as much as possible and hedging. And Harrison Barnes just whiffed on corner three after corner three after corner three. So I trust Steph. I trust Clay. I trust Draymond and I trust KD. So the number five guy, you know, I wouldn't describe it as catastrophic if Iggy took a step back. He's starting to get old. I don't expect it. But if that were to happen, I mean, guess who per 36 minutes has the highest BPM on this roster? It's JaVale McGee, okay? You can't leave JaVale McGee wide open because what happens is he gets, like, wide open lobs. And I just think that that offense is better than the Cavs offense could be. And then, like, defense, like, yeah, they'll exploit JaVale McGee. But if I'm the Warriors, I just say, JaVale, just, like, don't foul Kyrie Irving during like the last couple of minutes of the game, and it's fine. Like you'll still outscore the Cavs, and JaVale will get, you know, a point every game down because you can just not cover JaVale at the basket. It's too easy at that point.
I like your thinking. I like where you're going with that. It makes me warm and happy inside listening to that. So well, thank you.
The one final up, Chris, and trust me, I have the Warriors in my favor right now, and I'm just saying the Cavs are, in my mind, you still can't count them out. And the one thing too, I mean, Kevin Durant, we haven't seen him come out at least in the postseason, at least from a 3-point standpoint. I mean, he hasn't shot over 37% since 2011. Last year, he shot only 28%. So, I mean, I don't know how much he will be able to translate that 3-point game into the postseason. I know they were in the finals before, but they also had Westbrook and Harden and all that. And I know obviously this team's much better than that OKC team, but still, I mean, Harrison Barnes shot a better 3-point percentage than Kevin Durant last year in the postseason. And I think it's just going to be something that, you know, you brought up Harrison Barnes, KD in high pressure situations. He's not a guy like, I mean, he's not a guy like MJ where he's never gone to a game seven. I mean, he's not a guy that you know, is a huge closer. So, I mean, I'm really looking for someone to be that huge closer because we couldn't see Steph do it last year. We couldn't see Clay do it, at least in the finals. We obviously saw him do it against OKC when he put up like 39 points or whatever that was. You know, it's something that I don't know if the Warriors will have that clutch moment when they need it.
Hmm. Well, and so I want to bring it back a little bit, just go back to the Eastern Conference. And Jason, I'll ask you this, and then I'll open it up to everybody else. You know, we've all kind of said here that the Cavs are the presumptive favorite. In that second tier right now, you've got Toronto with the Ibaka trade, obviously shoring up a little bit to compete. You've got Boston in the mix. You've got Washington in the mix. Is there anybody you think can knock off Cleveland or that matches up really well with Cleveland?
I think Boston is the most talented, but they do not match up particularly well with Cleveland. Their rebounding is not good. I think Cleveland can shut down Isaiah Thomas fairly well. That's not a good matchup. The Wizards are interesting. We haven't seen that in the playoffs. I do think that the combination of Wall and Beal is an interesting challenge for the Cavs. It would be hard to have LeBron, you know, contain one of those guys. And it's kind of a challenge, obviously, for Kyrie, who's defensively limited. But I think Wall is an especially tough challenge. So I don't think any of the three particularly have a good shot. I do think Washington maybe is the most interesting. I think Toronto helped itself a little bit with Serge Ibaka, but they would still need help to beat the Cavs in a playoff series.
I do think that the Wizards are really interesting team to possibly challenge the Cavs. And I mean, their starters are averaging like, what, 86 points a game, and their bench is only averaging 20. There were all those rumors going around that the Wizards were looking for some scoring, and possibly Lou Will would be that piece. I do think that if the Wizards are able to add a legitimate scorer off the bench, that could be a huge help to them. But I also, while the Raptors have fallen recently, I do think that if it works out, that the Serge Ibaka trade could really pay dividends to him. I mean, yeah, you have a backcourt, one of the best backcourts in the NBA. Damari Carroll starting to look a little bit better. Serge Ibaka can shut down Kevin Love. I don't see any reason why that can't be a solid 6-game series, 7-game series, possibly. And I mean, a lot of basketball has to do with which way the ball bounces. I mean, look at that Ray Allen shot. That wouldn't have happened if the ball wouldn't have bounced straight into Bosch's hands.
Yeah, I think I agree with you with the Raptors, Tim, because, I mean, you look at the addition of Ibaka, and if Damari Carroll can do what he did against LeBron back in Atlanta, I think that's going to be a huge thing, too, because if he can come back to where he was defensively, that's going to at least slow down LeBron James. You're not going to be able to stop him, but at least slow him down. And then if you look at that Toronto series last year in the playoffs against the Cavs, K-Love shot 44% from three, and even Channing Frye off the bench, he shot 58% from three. So Serge, being that defender and how good of a defender he can be, I think it's going to be something that might be the big addition to at least push it to a more competitive 6 games or a more competitive even 7 games.
If you loved me for my pro Warriors takes before, then you're really going to love me now. A more realistic and constructive discussion to have about strategic things that Eastern Conference teams can do to upset the Cavs. I think there's a more constructive conversation to have about that than there is to have about any of those Eastern Conference teams then making it to the finals and beating the Warriors. So, the Wizards have a weak bench. That matters during the regular season, doesn't matter as much during the postseason. Otto Porter this year has been a top 15 player in the Eastern Conference. And then, of course, Bradley Beal, John Wall are fantastic and match up really, really well, I think, with the Cavs backcourt. And then you look at Toronto. Yeah, I really like the Ibaka addition because Valanciunas Ibaka does make sense for the Cavs against other players that play smaller than the Cavs do. I really like coming off the bench, Patrick Patterson and then Ibaka playing the five and spreading the floor. I think that's a really interesting look. They've got a lot of depth, but then you just get to the finals and get slaughtered. So like, unless something crazy goes wrong or the ball bounces a particular way.
Well, and so I'll ask you guys the question is, you know, we begin to wind things down here a little bit. We've had a little bit of discussion of the MVP race, and really this is one of the more contested ones in recent years. You know, the early narrative at the beginning of the season was now that Russell Westbrook is on his own team, that he's going to go crazy and put up all these ridiculous numbers, and that's been mostly true. You also have James Harden, who's been putting up video game numbers. I mean, that triple-double line where he had over 50 points is still just one of the most ridiculous lines I've ever seen. You know, you heard Chris earlier mention LeBron James in the mix as well. He's really gunning for it. Kevin Durant, too, out of sheer efficiency. So, you know, I want to go down the line. So I guess, Tim, I'll start with you. You know, if you're casting an MVP vote today, who are you taking?
This is hard. Russell Westbrook this season, 31 points, 10 assists, 10.5 rebounds with a 29.5 PER and an 8.0 VORP. James Harden, 29 points, 11 assists, 8 boards, 27.6 PER with a 6.5 VORP. I mean, those numbers are so similar, but if you're going just by sheer numbers, then the nod would have to go to Russell Westbrook. But at the end of the day, and Kevin, we had this discussion on the Drive and Dish podcast, is that I do feel like at a certain point in time that we should be giving this award to the best player in basketball, and that player is LeBron James, and I think he's had one hell of a season, and it's hard to argue. It's the same concept, like, why doesn't Popovich get Coach of the Year every single year? There's just, while these two guys are absolutely killing it, and they are going, one of them is going to get it, I think that we should seriously consider LeBron James for this. He is the best player in basketball.
Chris, how about you? Do you agree with that take? You know, you kind of argued with him earlier, or you kind of argued earlier that LeBron was really going to be competing for this. You know, do you think this is his award to lose?
I don't think it's anyone's award to lose. I think there are some like really good contestants, and if I had to guess, it's probably either going to be Harden or Westbrook. But in my mind, and I think we all know here that my decision on this is what actually matters, not what the NBA decides is the MVP. In my mind, the three guys going for the MVP right now are LeBron, Harden, and Kawhi Leonard.
Really? No Westbrook?
It's just like with Westbrook. You know, I end up having the same conversation with everyone. I say, well, replace Westbrook with a league average starting point guard, say Drew Holiday. How good is this team? You know, I think their point differential is that of about a 40-win team. I think that if you replace Drew Holiday, you have to change your strategy a lot. I mean, it would help just for the simple fact that Drew Holiday like hits his threes and is more of a threat from distance. So, you know, Andre Roberson is less of an offensive liability. You have more floor spreading. I just think that like a team with Drew Holiday, Steven Adams, and Enes Kanter coming off the bench, unless he broke his hand on a chair. Andre Roberson is one of the best defensive wings in the game. Oladipo's no slouch. They have depth. They have some talent. And like maybe they would be a 35-win team after you adjust for all the differences instead of a 40-win team. And in terms of differential, the Thunder have gotten lucky in some late game situations. Meanwhile, we've seen what happens when you take LeBron off of a team. The Cavs fall apart. The Heat fell apart, didn't make the playoffs after being in the finals. I mean, if you take Harden away or replace Harden with like a league average point guard like Drew Holiday instead, I think they wouldn't be all that great. Kawhi Leonard, meanwhile, and I'm leaning towards Kawhi Leonard, the Spurs are number one in defense. And I think everyone remembers this offseason. Well, you know, Pau Gasol's coming in. He's no Tim Duncan. That's not how the Spurs play defense. Like they cut the court in half and say, okay, Kawhi, no one's going to make anything from whichever side you're on. So if you're strong side, then no one's going to make anything over there. And then weak side, we can use our old guys to cover half the terrain essentially and help. And they have had the best defense, and it is, you know, probably 60% Kawhi and then 90% Kawhi and Danny Green, I think, combined. So and then they have the number five offense, and that's what really is the kicker for me. I mean, the Spurs having the number five offense, given their roster, given the fact that they take more mid-range jump shots than anyone else in the league, given the fact that Pau Gasol is now injured and they've only stepped up their game on that end. Kawhi Leonard, to me, you know, he's starting to average like 30 points a game because he has to, and that was always the question about him, right? It's like, yeah, well, he's the best two-way player in the league. No arguments here. On offense, could he carry a team? Hell yeah, he can. He's carrying the second best team in the NBA right now. So Kawhi Leonard, to me, really compelling case.
So Bram, you have your ballot. You're in the proverbial voting booth, if you will. Who are you checking on the box?
I'm kind of going rogue and voting Adam Silver. I think that the way that Adam Silver dealt with the Charles Oakley situation and that horrible shit show of a situation that involved the New York Knicks. No, but for real, like, I wish that it wasn't just players. I wish that the MVP could be Adam Silver, because I think he actually deserves it. But if we actually do have to obviously do players, right now, I mean, I, as much as it pains me, I think I'm going Harden. Yeah.
It really is. Like, this is one of the more ridiculous MVP rate. You know, a few years ago when it was Steph who won and he just beat Al Harden, it was one of those, like, really close votes where I really couldn't tell. But, you know, with this one, there's just so many legitimate candidates and even guys that we're not talking about as much. But, yeah, Adam Silver is amazing. And even going back to just how he handled the Donald Sterling situation.
Oh, totally.
A few
yeah,
other
yeah,
things.
Totally.
Yeah, he really is the real MVP of all of this.
I think the MVP is the league itself. Like, you know, the NBA has structured itself in such a way that they're making a crazy amount of money, and they're structured in such a way that, like, they're going to be good for a while. And, you know, they don't have any huge, you know, black eyes or like things that will work against them in the future. And I think that they're being extremely smart about the way that they approach their business and their personal lives. And but that being said, so obviously we can't just say like, oh yeah, the NBA should be the MVP of the NBA season. But so as far as it, but as far as teams go, yeah, at that, you know, as much as it pains me, like I said, I think it has to be Harden.
So we've got one vote LeBron, one vote Kawhi Leonard, one vote James Harden. Jason, who do you got?
Well, that's a really tough decision. You know, I would lean toward, I was going to lean toward Kawhi Leonard as well. I mean, I think 50-40-90 season, he's very close to that. 31% usage. He's in, I believe, in the top 10 in scoring, around 25 points a game. Second in PER, third in win shares for 48, and eighth in box score plus minus. And I think of the main candidates, you know, Harden, Russ, LeBron, maybe KD, I think he's by far the best defensive player, and we talked about his defensive impact on the Spurs and how they've played with him on there. I am leaning toward him, but I think we have, you know, four or five worthy candidates, and it's pretty close to a toss-up for me.
And then, so Sean, last but not least, I'll ask you the question. You got another one for Kawhi there. Do we have one vote for Russ, or are you going to stick with the trend going against him?
Well, I think Chris made a perfect argument for Kawhi Leonard, but the thing I think goes against him is just the fact that the Spurs have been so great and people just take it for advantage. It's just kind of like with the Patriots in the NFL, like, all right, the Spurs are going to be here. I think if you take Russ off of OKC, they're not a playoff team. I don't think they're going to be in that seventh spot. Russ has done something that, you know, no one's done since 1961, 1962, if he keeps this up. I think it's truly, since it is like a stat-driven league and people do look at the stats and people look at records, I think people see the impact that Russ has on OKC. I think people see the impact that James Harden has on Houston. So I think those, it's really between those two, just because of the stats that they're putting up. I mean, Harden has not had a game without seven assists. So it's either seven assists or more for Harden. And then obviously Russ averaging a triple-double. I think in the end it will most likely go to Russ because of, I mean, if you're going to be marketing to players, I mean, you're going to be marketing this to creating the story of, you know, without KD, Russ is going to be the MVP. And I think media members are going to look for that as well. You know, without KD on the team, Russ was able to bring an MVP to OKC, and then as well as the first player to average a triple-double since Oscar Robinson, since 1961, 1962. So I think it's the storyline and the stats that might actually end up winning Russell Westbrook the MVP, because I don't think he's truly the most valuable player, like Chris said, and his argument for Kawhi Leonard was great. I think it's going to be ending up being Russ because he is so marketable.
Great minds think alike is what we say around here. And you know, Bram said it best a little bit ago, the league certainly healthier than ever. You know, so many great storylines. The MVP race is going to be fantastic. The playoffs are shaping up to be a lot of fun as well. You know, just like this roundtable, again, we want to thank everyone for joining us here on the Blog Talk Midseason All-Star. You know, I almost called it Midseason Recap 2, Electric Boogaloo, but I didn't want to, you know, make that reference. But I do want to thank all of these gentlemen for joining us tonight. My name is Kevin Rayfuse. I am the host of the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Follow the podcast on Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA. You can follow me on Twitter at Refuse to Lose. Follow my co-host Tim Tompkins of the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Also, make sure you check out the Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast that's part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. Follow Tim on Twitter at Radio Tim NBA. Chris Axman, he's the host of the Almighty Ballin' NBA show, founder of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network at almightyballer.com. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Almighty Ballin'. Jason Mann, make sure you check out the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast, as well as the Step Back on fansided.com. Follow him on Twitter at Jason Mann Ohioan. Bram Kinchelow, GoldenStateOfMind.com. Check out his Golden State of Mindcast here on Blog Talk Radio. His Twitter is Bram Kinchelow. Make sure you follow him there. And last but not least, again, Sean Anderson. He's repping the Fast Break podcast. Also, check out MostValuablePodcast.com. You know, gentlemen, this is a lot of fun, and we also want to give a shout-out to Jay Soderberg and the Blog Talk Radio team for, you know, making all of this possible and really getting the ball rolling on this roundtable. And, you know, still we got a few weeks left, but I'm smelling an end-of-season roundtable in a few weeks as well.
Great. I don't really care about the end-of-the-season roundtable. I simply just want to watch the first Pelicans game.
Yeah, me too.
Either way, must-see television, the Boogie and the Brow.
I think we've done enough dancing for today, so why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Star Side.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole!
Da-da-da-da-da. Hey! Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da. Hey!
Let's go while we're young!
All right, I think they get the point.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.